Say two, one, two, three. One, two, yeah. Snaps.
Snaps.
Perfect.
Alright.
Okay.
Great. Lovely.
So, should we do an introduction?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
We should absolutely do an introduction.
Okay, let's, how about this? Let's introduce each other. I'll introduce you first. This is Scabby, multi-instrumentalist and front person for Celestial Winter Trash. And now you can introduce me.
I don't think we could do that.
Why not?
Because I don't think I can introduce you. You're too great.
Juan
Kwong.
That's so funny.
Known friend and the best person around.
Exactly.
Tech writer currently located in... Not going to dox my best friend, so not going to do that. But very good all-around person, Juan Kwong, just 10 out of 10.
First of all, that's great, and I'm going to steal all of that from my Twitter bio. Second of all, speaking of my Twitter bio, I've doxed myself already, so people already know.
You've already doxed yourself. It's too late.
And third of all, the reason you're so charitable, and I love that about you, because the reason you're having trouble introducing me is because I haven't done fucking anything with my life.
No, that's not right. You're published. You're a person with significance.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't say that like that because you don't believe it.
I'm okay. Let's talk about why I'm significant right now. I'm significant.
Sure, that's a great way to start your podcast.
Yeah, I'm significant because I'm one of the first people. In the nation, I guess, to have seen...
To talk about here.
No, to have seen Black Panther.
Right, you are.
This is the show. We're starting the show.
Woo! Let's do it.
So you haven't seen it, I'm guessing.
No, I have not. But I'm very interested to hear what you...
How about this? How about you just ask me some questions about it? How about you just...
How does it justify its length? I feel like it's going to be kind of a long movie, probably.
Boy, it's a dense one, let me tell you.
Okay.
But it is not... It justifies its length, for sure. For sure.
That's cool. All right, so does it feel like well-paced and all that?
When I was watching it, I was acutely aware of its length, but in a good way. Like, I was like, okay... Some stuff's happening, but there's still a lot of movie left to go. So I'm glad about, you know what I mean? Like it's like
mm-hmm.
it's when something is paced well and you, mm-hmm. it's satisfyingly long.
You're looking forward to more of it. Yeah, you're like, all right, exactly. I know there's some more of this, and I'm okay with that right now.
Yeah, exactly. It was
as opposed to like, boy, I really have to go to the bathroom, and this movie just will not stop throwing crap at me.
Yeah, it's just. When I was watching it, I was thinking specifically about the length, and I was like, man, I'm thinking back to, like, the first really long movie I ever watched, which, of course, was Lord of the Rings.
Back to the Future.
No. That's not a long... I don't think that's a plus 2-hour epic.
But you saw all of it, so...
No,
one
Spielberg...
Go, the entire series. Lord of the Rings is probably a lot of people's first long movie.
That is a... fucking slog. I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, yeah, for totally. All, like, okay, it's good, you know, visual effects.
No one will get mad at you for this. This is good. This is put out of the internet.
This is not as hot a take as it may once have been. But yeah, it's like, it's very dense and it's very, the thing, you know what it is? It's populated with so many good characters. And, so, like, not only is it a visual treat, like, I'm sure you've heard about people praising, like, the set design and the costume design and the overall aesthetic of it is just spectacular. Mm-hmm. Like, they nail Afrofuturism and solar punk and all this good stuff.
Good shit.
Yeah, so it's just, like, it's good to look at, you know? But also, it's very, very... you know, well written and well, just a triumph from Mr. Coogler.
Refresh my memory. What else is the director known for? Like, I know that, like,
his two big claims to fame were Creed, mm-hmm. which also starred Michael B. Jordan. I didn't see that one.
Mm-hmm.
And Fruitvale Station, which was about that poor guy who got murdered on the part, I think it was.
Fine, give me one second. You can edit this out. I have to go open the...
Yeah. na 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 na. We are experiencing technical difficulties. Na 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 na.
Like 5 seconds, you can
edit that. Na 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 na. I was doing like a thing, like a technical difficulties card.
Okay.
So yeah, so we're good. I got a good amount of Girl from Ipanema in there. Anyway.
So you said you were saying Fruitvale Station and Creed.
Creed are his other two big claims to fame.
I haven't heard of Fruitvale Station.
You should watch it. It's very.
I will. Yes.
It's very.
So the pacing is good, which is not typical for.
It's not, especially not for a Marvel. Exactly. You know what it is though? It's that it's so unconcerned with. I think what happened was. Based on like the cultural significance that people could tell that this film was going to have, like from the jump, and based on like the huge amount of talent and money that they were putting behind it for whatever reason, Kevin Feige and his overlords were probably like a little more lenient on the universe building that this film had to do, which is to say nothing.
Good,
because there's
give a fuck.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They need, like, it needs to trend more in this direction, I think, and less in the direction of stuff like...
Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, the stuff like Civil War, which was, like, so... Like, it was fine, it was good, but it was just trying
to
tell...
You see all these loose ends? You see how he's tying all this together?
Ah, like, look at all these loose ends that are going to take
it's
you
like
all
a TV
the
show,
the
but it's like a TV show, but worse.
Yeah, it's like a TV show, but less efficient and more expensive.
Don't you want to go to the movies for this? Serialized dramas.
It's so good. It's so, and you know, the characters are all really, really engaging. Especially, like, what's his name?
Is there not too many of them?
No, there's many.
but it doesn't feel overstuffed.
No, because like, here's the thing with like, if you say, oh, this movie had too many characters, it's only because you didn't like them. You know what I mean? Because you have no reason to complain if they're all, like, engaging and interesting to watch and you're, you know, invested in what they're going to do. Like,
which
and you're
is not typical for a Marvel.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm just going to keep... This is just me stealth dunking on...
But that's the thing, though. That's what people are going to say, is that, like, the reason this movie gets it so right is because it's not preoccupied with, like, it's preoccupied with being a movie as opposed to being a commercial for another movie.
Okay, I get that. That's totally great.
What's this guy's name? Duke, I think his name is. He plays like a D-tier Black Panther villain called Man-Ape, but obviously
please.
He plays like a huge role in this, and it's so good. He is so, like, he's got this like rivalry with T'Challa, and he's got not only can he do like the serious stuff, he can do like the proud warrior guy thing that he has to do, but he's also got like incredible comedic timing. Like,
really?
Yeah, it's one of those. Like,
is this a funny movie? It's
good? Fucking funny, dude. At one point. Oh, so let's talk about this then. I obviously, like, I was in the theater and it's a predominantly black audience, right?
Okay.
And I'm sitting there and it's a trip watching that movie. Because, okay, here's the thing about that movie is that when I came out of it, I could tell that I had seen a really good movie. But I was also thinking about how remarkable it is that that was a movie that is so, so not for me. As someone who isn't a part of that culture and wasn't raised anywhere near that culture.
Mm.
Like, for example, like right at the beginning, part of the beginning is in Oakland, right? And it's just two just like dudes who are planning a hit, like a robbery or something. And like the door knocks and there's some Wakandan royal guards outside, right? And you know what they look like. Like they're proud warrior women and they're all bald. Shaved bald. And so he looks through the peephole of the apartment and he looks at the other guy with him and he says, like, there's these two Grace Jones looking ladies outside. And I know who Grace Jones is, but I don't know what she looks like. So everybody in the theater was just like rolling in the aisles, and I was like, "Whoa, what just happened? what just whizzed over my head so spectacularly?" Yeah. And then like so stuff like that, right? Like cultural references, but also it goes deeper than that. You know, it's the aesthetic language of the film, right? Is something that's made from the ground up for that audience. And I love that. That's what makes it such a...
She just never seen
it. Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, literally never.
On this scale.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's a black film that's just sort of pushing past the gatekeepers, as it were. Mm. But it's not inaccessible in the same way. Like, it also has... I didn't know this, but this movie sort of put forth this theory in my head that I have now, where memes in the African American community sort of have like a longer shelf life because they dropped a what are those?
Oh,
they dropped a what are those? Really? Yeah. And okay. See, now you see what I mean. See, that was exactly my reaction. But
sorry,
people...
I was my mind was pulled back decades.
Exactly.
In terms of shelf life,
it's been 84 years.
It's 85 years.
But that was my reaction. But people were rolling; they were loving it. Okay. So it was still pretty fresh, I guess. I guess the execution is part of it too. But I was like, "Wow, really? We're still
doing this, huh?"
Because it wasn't. It's not one of those things that like it's timely at the time of filming, but by the time it comes out, it's dated.
No,
it's
that was
wicked dated. No,
yeah, it's already.
It's wicked dated, but like they all.
Ellen DeGeneres is probably already.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Ellen DeGeneres is over that.
what was that episode again?
But like, so exactly, so like Ryan Coogler and what's her name, Wright. Something right. The little
sure.
one. They all stood in a circle and were like, "We should drop a what are those?" And everybody was like, "Okay, let's do it." Right. And it'll be good and people will like it. And they did. So I don't know what I guess I don't
they,
know.
They clearly didn't know what they're doing more than I do,
yeah,
I guess.
Exactly. That was like yeah, it was a learning experience. Mm-hmm. So it's like stuff like that. And God, I just really gotta give it to Michael B. Jordan too. Like
you sent me the intro track from the OST for Black Panther,
yeah,
and I did not listen to it because I actually do want to listen to everything in context first.
I mean, just
to get surprised, I guess. I don't know. I'm not usually the type to do soundtrack spoiler. Like I'm not.
Well, it's not.
Listen,
it doesn't.
I'll listen to a thing.
It's super duper. Doesn't spoil anything. There's no plot related. It's Paramedic by SOB with Kendrick Lamar. It doesn't spoil anything. It's just sort of, it perfectly encapsulates. It's something from his perspective, from his point of view, I think.
Okay.
Right. It's sort of the thematic underpinnings of his backstory. Right?
Interesting music. So.
Like if you,
it's a banger.
Plus, it's a fucking bop too. It's so good.
I wanted to ask: are there any like? Are there any respectability politics in this movie?
Respectability politics insofar as, like... Well, okay, here's the thing.
We have to do better.
Yeah, exactly. Respectability politics...
Like
respectability politics in the context of African-Americans and racism, right? Is always, like... I think this movie... So, okay, I was having this conversation last night with Daisha, actually.
Okay.
This movie doesn't know it, or maybe it does, and it's just not addressing it. But the real dichotomy, the real conflict, comes from, like, classism, right?
Okay.
Because it's about, like, it's about the oppressors and what Wakanda, which is this fictional thing, but it's the only, it's like, this is a hypothetical, like, oh, what are the responsibilities of an entity that has the power to overthrow the oppressors? Like, it's reform versus revolution, right?
Mm.
It's that eternal question.
Movies are always really great about tech.
Exactly. That, but that's the thing, it's like...
Especially when they're about monarchs.
Yeah, but... Oops, okay. God, there's so much to unpack. I guess.
I know.
They
listen. We can do just a very. It doesn't have to be like mega. Like,
no, it won't be. It
especially
won't,
since
it like, won't be because I'm literally too stupid to do it.
No, don't do that to yourself, Juan. No, this is not a self-deprecation.
Here's how they tackle
me. We celebrate ourselves on here.
Yeah, this is it. Okay, you're right. Let's celebrate ourselves. I love me. And I love you.
Yay.
Here's how they tackle monarchy, which I think is fine. Human nature is not like, who was it? Hobbes or whatever his name, who was like the Leviathan. Humans are essentially bastards. In this movie, humans are not essentially bastards. And you can have a monarchy through a super wild system of vetting that is very, very much built to ensure that, like, you don't put people in power who don't belong there, right?
Right. And whether that's essentially, can you be a superhero?
Yeah, exactly. because that's the goal, right? If you have like somebody who is infallible in that way that a superhero is, or that we like them to be, then that would make a great king, right? Because they would always make all the right decisions no matter what,
right?
But like, so I was saying, like, I love Michael B. Jordan in this movie, not just because he kills the role, but also because, you know, you root for him. You can't help but root for him because his ideology, like, his motivation is literally like, hey, you know how slavery still exists and mm-hmm. we get disproportionately murdered and incarcerated mm-hmm. and get mm-hmm. weapons and drugs in our communities mm-hmm. and all that bad stuff? I'm mm-hmm. against that. And I'm going to take some steps to combat that. That's his whole thing. So it's like, how do you root again? T'Challa look mm-hmm. like a douchebag for being like, yeah, but we got, you know, there's
definitely
a way.
Sounds like a Hollywood movie right here.
It's like, exactly. And, you know, it's fine for what it is, which is, you know.
Is this basically just the Magneto problem?
Yeah. It is.
It's
the Magneto. If
God damn it.
That's the thing.
Is this just Black Magneto?
Whenever you have whenever you have a story about like,
is it just like, oh no, he's totally right, but he's just in all the wrong ways.
Well, no, I will say this. He really. So at the end of the movie. Do you care if it's like spoiled?
I don't. But the thing is that people will. So, and I want them to listen to this. So let's not do that. Let's keep this as spoiler free as possible.
But there's a line. Okay, this is not a spoiler. Michael B. Jordan at one point is like, they ask him to surrender, obviously, and he's like, why? So you can lock me up? And he's like, nah. I would rather
good
die.
Dialogue.
Just, yeah. No, it's. I'm not doing it justice.
I'm kidding. Well, I know it's not.
But he's. But the gist of it is, I'd rather die than be locked up. And if I'm dead, just bury me out at sea with my brothers who jumped over the edge of the ships because they knew that death was preferable to bondage. Mm. And he's not saying that to, like, Martin Freeman or Andy Serkis. He's saying that to T'Challa, which is, like, I think it really drives home sort of, like, okay, it's the end of the movie and the bad guy is defeated, but we can't just keep on carrying on the way we've been carrying on, right? Mm-hmm. So inaction is not an option. But I guess there's a middle ground between that and violent revolution, which, you know, as enlightened individuals, you and I know that that's not true. But
I will never claim to be an enlightened individual.
Yeah. But that, you know, it is the Magneto problem, but at least it does take steps to directly address the systemic problems of like anti-black racism over the centuries, and I think it's a step in the right direction, and I think that is they did the best they could while also making a movie that isn't a fucking bummer, and it's actually like fun to watch and great and good and really good.
Well, that's great. That sounds promising, and I can't wait to watch it as the theaters aren't just absolutely slammed.
Yeah, they are slammed. I was at, like, I told you I went to like an IMAX 3. Like, I bought the most expensive ticket they had. It was jammed. There was not an empty seat in the
house. One cinematic experience, please.
Yeah,
your finest cinematic experience.
Your
top shelf.
Take me away. And I'm never doing that again, actually, because I came out with, like, a wicked migraine. Like, I was in so much pain, and I was going to vomit immediately afterwards. So I'm never doing that again, but I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I gave them so much money.
Alright, that's good. I guess, do you want to, like, go on to a much worse movie that I will definitely not talk about for too long?
Yes.
The only reason that we are going to discuss this on this podcast is because this fucking train wreck got a sequel somehow. But
okay, now you could be talking about anything.
fair enough, absolutely. I could be talking about anything. But I'm talking about Den of Thieves.
Okay.
The hot Gerard Butler joint
That
recently hit. Well, not recently. Actually, it's been in theaters for a while. We watched it because I don't know, there was nothing else on. And we just wanted to watch a heist movie, I guess. Fuck that movie. Fuck that movie so much, and I cannot believe that it is getting a sequel.
It's got a pretty decent score on IMDb.
Yeah, because here's the thing. People are fooled by the first scene. The first scene is like, it's like Heat. Heat is like, the first scene is just the really cool, they rob the armored car. And it's rad as hell. And honestly, the first scene in this is pretty, like, the sound design is super good. And I feel like they just wasted the entire budget on it. Because it's tight. It's kind of tense. There's a ruthless efficiency to the people. But they're also, it's good. It's a good first scene. And that's all I will give this fucking movie. Everything else is just Gerard Butler looking like a popped blister, grumbling with food or cigarettes in his mouth because nobody fucking cares about him masking his accent anymore. And it's in completely. Brenda and I were talking about this. It's like he's like a big action star. No one needs to be fooled anymore. Like the cat's out of the bag. You can do your. And I wonder if it's like on set if everyone's like Gerard, you can do you, homie. Like it's fine. Like you don't have to. He's like, no, I could do this. This is totally convincing. I'm garbage.
Christian Bale.
And it's just a crime equivalent of like the same masculine bullshit that he's been peddling for so long. Like
it looks pretty bad.
It's ridiculous. Like, and it's just. I feel like it's the silent killer. Like you don't realize how many absolutely terrible
film
Gerard Butler. But look at his IMDb page and like look at every single like even his romantic comedies are like disgustingly like chauvinistic and shit. Like
oh my god, that one I didn't see it, but that one
Ugly where... Truth.
No, not that one. Although that one's bad. Isn't there one where it is a romantic comedy ostensibly based on the promotional materials, but it's him and Jennifer Aniston, and I think he's a bounty hunter, and she jumped bail, and he, like, puts her in a fucking trunk and is like, you're going back to jail, sweetie.
God,
it's
yeah.
just,
no,
it's like he hogties her and everything. It's,
you know, like movies.
Yeah, like movies.
Messages?
Like culture?
Oh, no, but I just wanted to, just dunk on that movie for at least 5 minutes because it is getting a fucking sequel and I cannot fathom that. And that's very unfortunate. But hey, it is what it is. No, but that movie sucks. I cannot believe that it is getting a sequel. And aside from it getting a sequel, I wanted to mention it because, like, it's another crime movie, and it literally does exactly, like, what we were talking about last week, where it's just, like, everything that, like, The Godfather does with, like, with Shades of Grey and shit, it's just, like, a celebration of, like, of that crap. Like,
just a tacit endorsement.
Like, oh, yeah. bad dudes being awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you a bad enough dude to put Jennifer Aniston into the trunk of your car?
Basically, yeah. It's bad. Do you want to talk about Sleepy Dogs?
I don't know. I feel like I don't feel like.
Do you think if we talk about it, we're just kind of like jinxing it? you just don't want to like.
No, I think
you don't want to talk about it until.
I don't think they can stop us now.
Nothing stops.
Stops this train.
I'm so excited, and I just hope that this is the thing, or maybe Rogue One was the thing that actually did just finally catapulted Donnie Yen into the mainstream. For a Western audience.
Yeah.
I want more Donnie Yen movies.
I absolutely agree. I was actually thinking about this. Like, Donnie Yen, obviously, like, brilliant, and, like, I can't think of anybody who could be, like, much better. Especially since
he's... He's a bit old, though.
Exactly. Okay. I'm glad you said it.
Yeah. No, I totally... Because... When I first heard it, I'm like, oh, yeah! And then I'm like, wait.
I feel so bad. I feel so bad bringing it up. I feel awful. I feel if Donnie Yen came into this apartment right now and, like, slapped me in the face, I'd be like, okay.
I'm sorry.
I apologize.
No, but the thing is that Wei Shen is... There's a big part of the whole Sleeping Dogs thing is that Wei Shen is not... old though, because yeah. he's
a loose cannon cop who doesn't play by the rules.
Not only is he a loose cannon cop, but he's also returning to like high school buddies and shit.
Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean?
Like the old neighborhood.
Just enough time has passed where it's like believable that like they haven't quite kept in contact with each other.
But they're still but they're still in that proximity.
But whatever, I don't care. I just want an excuse for Donnie Yen to kick some ass. And this is where I tell you one to watch Triple X, the Return of Xander Cage.
Really?
Please watch that movie because they secretly made another Fast and the Furious movie, and nobody knew.
Oh man!
Please! It is literally like I told Brenda that what they did was they made. I know that Vin Diesel is like a huge D&D nerd.
Yeah.
They basically made a D&D movie, but they just couched it in like extreme sports dialogue and like rad things. And like Ruby Rose is in it and she like hunts poachers.
What?
Yeah, and Donnie Yen is in it and he's like the bad dude, but he's like really good. He's a good boy. He's the best boy. It's so good. Oh my god. You should... Look, I know that this sounds... like, not something I would say, but yeah, you should watch The Return of Xander Cage. That movie's pretty alright.
Okay.
But I hope Sleeping Dogs actually comes out. I really hope it actually comes out.
I really hope.
I'm nervous as hell about it. The property seems cursed.
Let's get some fun content in. Let's do, like, a fan cast.
You know what? I'll
go first. I'll go first.
You go first, because I actually don't know too... Like, I love Sleeping Dogs, but, like, I don't have like people in mind, you know what I mean?
Yeah, this segment is only enjoyable.
This could be just you.
This segment is only enjoyable to people who played through Sleeping Dogs at least twice and remember the names of like all the girlfriends. First of all, okay, here's my first fan cast. Emma Stone as Emma Stone.
Perfect.
Got him.
I mean, she's not doing anything, right?
Yeah, she's not busy. She needs to start playing a white woman again after that.
Absolutely.
Aloha movie.
Good dunk.
Yeah. Second fan cast, James Hong as James Hong using CGI. Whatever they use to wrench Peter Cushing's corpse out of the grave. Do that same thing to James Hong. Because I love James Hong a lot, and I hate that we have to do this to him, but I feel like it's more disrespectful.
It needs to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
I just want to do those two goofs. I didn't actually have anybody in mind.
That's good. Those are two good enough goofs, and probably enough time to dedicate to Sleeping Dogs. Because, let's be real, nobody...
So, I hope that retroactively, like, puts people into the game.
Hey, you should play Sleeping Dogs. Sleeping Dogs is pretty neat.
Yeah.
It's the only good game about a cop.
It's the only good game about cops. It's the only good game about Hong Kong. It's the only good game about parkour.
That's
and I'm counting the Assassin's Creed franchise. It's the only good game that uses the Arkham combat system aside from the Arkham games. What That's, else?
Yeah.
It's the only good game where you can live on a boat.
It's one of the better, like, in terms of, like, martial arts content, one of the better martial arts games, oh, I guess.
Like, top three, I would say.
Probably, yeah. It's a good underlooked game.
Yeah.
It's a shame that more people have.
Criminal.
The game? Hopefully, fuck, I really hope it gets made.
It's a studio killer, too, isn't it? It's one of those games.
It is a studio killer. Well, actually, no, I think they went on to do something else, but then they didn't finish it or whatever. But yeah, it's as close. It is probably a studio killer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really hope that gets made. Like, God,
what's your favorite?
Crestfallen if it didn't.
Oh, I'm so there with you. Another one I'm gonna buy IMAX tickets for.
But you said you were gonna do it again.
No, I wasn't gonna do 3D again because the 3D what gave me like headache and nausea. But I can still do like.
Oh.
Normie IMAX.
Baby IMAX.
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to try to upsell you on it? You're like, hey, she
yeah,
wants you.
You're going to knock that up to 3D?
So, like, come on,
if you give me a barf bag.
Let's see. Do you want to move on to music, maybe?
I was going to say something else about Sleeping Dogs, but I forgot. Oh, yeah. No, I have a good segue into video games.
What's your good segue into video games?
What's your favorite studio killer?
Ooh,
isn't that a fun topic? I feel like nobody talks about that.
Nobody does talk about because it's a hard one.
It's like people's livelihoods. Yeah, I suppose that's hard.
What was Clover Studios' last project? I'm gonna Google that real quick. Whatever they did last is probably my favorite studio killer. I think technically it might be Okami, but I'm gonna say God Hand. Because I probably prefer God Hand to Okami.
The first and only Clover game I ever played was Beautiful Joe.
And it's a good game.
That's not a studio killer, because they went on after that. Because
it was actually a successful
smash,
franchise.
Yeah,
it was
a smash hit. They got an anime out of it.
Can't wait to see that. New OVA. Beautiful Joe OVA 2018. It's coming. Count on it. Bet. Starring Donnie Yen.
Please donate to my Kickstarter, Beautiful Joe starring Donnie Yen. But it'll be like in the style of the game, so it'll be like Donnie Yen with a tiny body and a huge head.
Perfect.
It'll make him look way younger.
That'll work.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what they'll do in Sleeping Dogs anyways. That's just the CGI that work. It's going to be like, everyone's going to talk about it. It'll be the new, it'll be 2019's Henry Cavill's mustache. Perfect. But it's probably God Hand for me. What's your favorite studio killer?
My favorite? I don't know if this is a studio killer.
By the way, when we talk about studio killers, we're specifically talking about video games that were the last thing that a development studio put out.
The death knell of a developer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm specifically talking about renowned development studio, Clover Studios, probably most known for Okami.
Yep.
The guy, the big, big, awesome dude, usually, I mean, not to make it only about one guy, but I guess when people talk about Clover, they usually think of Kamiya, the guy who directed Devil May Cry.
Yep.
And, well, you know, that's all that needs to be said, Devil May Cry.
Yep.
what about you?
For me, I haven't played a lot. I haven't played as many studio killers, I think, probably because I'm such a normie, and I'm so... I don't play that many, like, things from studios that are, like, not doing great, you know what I mean?
Okay, I got you.
Which I think is the case for, like, a lot of people. Maybe less so now.
I'm actually surprised I managed to come up with one on the fly. I understand you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think there's probably more Japanese studio killers than there are American ones, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like there are probably some riskier moves. And it's just, on the whole, a riskier situation.
Yeah, for sure.
Financially, for Japanese studios.
Okay, I just thought of something. Is Obsidian Studios still a thing?
Yeah, they're still a thing.
Okay, I was going to say
New Vegas.
They're
making Pillars of Eternity.
I was going to say New Vegas.
No,
but
definitely
still...
not New Vegas.
Yeah. Fuck, that's a good game.
Almost.
Almost, yeah. A studio lethal wounder.
There you go.
Not a studio killer. Then I guess it would be L.A. Noire.
Actually, Team Bandai is still trying to get Horror of the Orient out off the ground somehow, what? I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Let me make 100% sure.
Do a Google.
Before I say that definitively. But I want to say Team Bandai.
While you Google Team Bondi, I'm going to...
No, never mind. They're under. They went under.
Okay, good. I mean, no, that's terrible. I feel bad for them.
No, yeah.
Because they did some
God,
pretty...
God bless the people who lost their job.
Yeah, exactly. I hope they're doing well, and I hope they get...
Yeah, hope they're on their feet and everything.
I hope they get recognition for the pioneer work that they did, because it was fucking pioneer.
For the motion capture work that nobody built on at all?
Yeah, exactly. The motion capture work that was... just prohibitively expensive, and if we're being terribly honest, it at times it could have been better, I guess, a little bit more polished. But like,
yeah.
You know, it's like nobody does like full motion video anymore.
I beg to differ. I guess you haven't played Contradiction, my friend.
What?
Oh, you should play Contradiction. Well, you would love Contradiction. There's actually kind of an FMV renaissance in Steam, where like. Yeah, totally. I'm not kidding. And you should look into Late Shift. That game is really rad. That game is like you just make choices and it's pretty seamless. And the game just reacts to what you do. And it's actually, hey, it's a heist game. I'm pretty sure you're just criming it up with this heist syndicate or whatever.
That's fucking cool.
Yeah, no, I guess. I don't know if it's still going around, but there was like a bit of a mini FMV renaissance for a while there. I want to say it might have had something to do with Giant Bomb's Fest. Not to credit Giant Bomb with too much popularity, but there's definitely still FMV stuff.
Oh, wow. I just Googled that.
Thank the Lord.
Yeah, no, it's great. I just Googled Late Shift, and one of the cast members here, his name is Joe Sourbutts.
Hey, good. Good name.
I was going to goof on it because I thought, like, oh, I looked past it really quickly and I thought it said shower butts. I thought there was an H in there. But I don't need to make that goof because sour butts is already funny.
It's much better. It just stands on its own.
Yeah. Okay. I'll download that then.
It's supposed to be very good. I just saw a bit of it, but I haven't played it. But you should definitely look into Contradiction. Contradiction is... Oh, boy.
I will.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a good segue. I have another segue.
Good. Just a segue machine here.
Yeah, I know.
It's actually a thing.
Yeah.
Give him a shake. And just beat the devil out of him. Sometimes those brushes get away and they go, soon, clean the other side of the room.
I want to go into fine art again, because fine art is now a staple of this podcast. I think we need
to... fine arty.
Yeah. No, not Guy. I only wrote down Guy Fieri in the show notes because I wanted to talk about something I found out about him over...
Guy Fieri?
Yeah.
Guy Fieri. No, that's... Did I tell you? That's his, like, apparently, like, his original family name is Fieri, but when they moved over, it was, like, anglicized. So he's really just, like, reclaiming that bit of heritage.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Like, that was kind of a crazy story, like, to come from the most... unserious sort of man in America to have that sort of gravitas behind his name.
Oh, you'd be surprised, my dude. Behind, there's like some stuff
behind that, the very name that is like plastered onto like the gauchest restaurants in America now.
Also like, the best.
Yeah.
he's really sweet dude, and like he's like a philanthropist
sure.
and shit.
I'm sure.
And like I think his something with his sister having some sort of there's a surprising amount of pathos for Guy Fieri.
No, that's a good biopic.
Okay, so what's your actual fine art?
No, my actual fine art is I want to talk about whether games are art.
And
two things. I have a hardline stance on this. I'm sorted out. I know where I stand. I think you know where you stand. But I want to use this podcast as a platform on which to publish my manifesto.
Alright.
My manifesto on why the idea of, like, trying to give video games gravitas by calling them art and sort of trying to get legitimacy that way from the establishment and the mainstream media and the globalists and what have you. it's not a legitimate way to go about doing that, because they're not art in any way. They're not, in and of themselves, what they are is vehicles for art, right? Because if you say, like, if you say, oh, it was incredible the way that the Telltale's The Walking Dead, like, that was an incredible story, and, like, that's an artistic game. Well, it's not. Like, what you're talking about is a narrative, and that's, like, that's a film, right? A novel or a screenplay, right? Mm-hmm. Those things are art, but putting that into a, putting that on Steam, right, and adding, like, QuickTime events to it, that's not art. That's just something that you did to sort of inconvenience the person who's trying to consume it in a way that is, like, emotionally gratifying.
Are you gonna continue?
No.
Okay.
I was gonna, but you started making noises, and now it's...
No, you continue.
No. I honestly don't have anything.
Oh, okay, good. So I see where you're coming from there, and honestly, my main takeaway from the discourse is that I feel like people who play video games are, like, just so behind the curve in terms of, like, how to talk about, like, cultural artifacts and stuff.
Agreed.
Just think about how Shadow of the Colossus was received when it first came out, mm-hmm. and how typically that game is lauded as, like, oh, this is it. We finally did it. Scientists have agreed. Every 9 out of 10 video game scientists agree. This is art. We did it. And when you probably ask any of them, you just go, like, well, I just felt such feelings.
Yeah.
And it's literally Tom Haverford looking at that painting and just go, like, that's it. That's the gamer experience right there. And it's they never talk about how Shadow of the Colossus is, like, what it does first, like, in terms of, like, its thesis, you mm-hmm. know, like, what is the Shadow of the Colossus? You know, like, how is the Shadow of the Colossus about its things?
Yeah.
And they just talk about, like, well, I felt things. I felt a lot of things. The same thing, same way with Journey.
That's what I was going to say, Journey. That's, like, the new Shadow of the Colossus.
Another one that's kind of held up. And I think a lot of it has to do because those are very opaque games. Those are games that are a lot about the player experience. Which brings me to my point where it's not so much the video game doing things to inconvenience you. I understand what you mean by that. It's just, like, the gameplay, it exists to either challenge the player or, like, just literally it's there as a way to have player agency.
Yeah.
But ultimately, like, those things work in concert with plot, characterization, music, everything to provide a sort of experience that is different from what you get from, like, you know, just reading the Walking Dead wiki.
Yeah.
The Walking Dead video game wiki. So I guess that's where I'm at. The way that I can boil this down, like, the basest way of summing up my argument is that I don't care. Like, I don't care if video games are art, you know. I would rather we first sorted out how we talk about video games in the first place, how we think about them, how we discuss how they're made, and just kind of work your way from there, because it's a mess.
I think, you know what I'll say? I think you have a point there. And I think maybe what I'm feeling is, what I'm slowly realizing is that I don't talk about video games with intelligent people. I hate this. This podcast is turning me into, like, nerdy.
A fine art snob.
No, it's turning me into, like, nerdy Bill Maher. Where it's like, I'm just insufferable.
That's the biggest dunk you could ever make about yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'm saying these things, like, with utter conviction, and then sort of just not bothering to engage with someone who can sort of take my argument, right, and then like pull it apart in a way that is, you know, satisfactory to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
And so, okay. I mean, look, let's face it. Most people don't want to talk about video games like on this level, and that's completely fine.
Most people don't want to talk about it on this level, and the people that do want to talk about it on this level are doing it, like I was saying before, as a sort of a means of like obtaining legitimacy for this thing that, first of all, is not old enough for us to have properly engaged with it. Like you said, we need to change the way we talk about it, and we need to, like, you know, get the grammar out.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, really fucking nail it down before we start making proclamation about what is and isn't art. What was I saying? I forgot. I can't hold... See, I can't even have these conversations anymore because, like, I'm so old now.
No.
That my... I can feel my youth...
Your neural synapses just fraying.
My youth is draining away into my LED-lit keyboard.
You're talking about like the either the grammar of how we would talk about the discourse that we would use to talk about like video games and stuff. And,
yeah.
You haven't really encountered people who like would be willing to have a conversation like that.
Yeah.
Beyond like, oh, it's fun, or like, oh, I don't know, I felt good. It was a sad game. It was a sad game.
It made me.
So it's art.
It gave me wet eyes. It gave me wet eyes, and it gave me hurt heart.
I'm actually playing through Shadow of the Colossus right now. To keep talking about video games, because it was recently they put out that remake.
Yeah,
which is my first time.
I still haven't fucking played.
You still haven't played Shadow of the Colossus. That's fine because this is my first time playing it too.
Really?
Yep. I know that's probably a big surprise.
No, but you're considering. Like, it is a big surprise. But also, how lucky that your first version is like this one.
A stable frame rate.
Yeah.
It's neat. And yeah, that game is pretty good. I didn't know that the soundtrack was as good as it was. I guess that just kind of flew under my radar, but it's a very, very nice soundtrack.
Yeah.
I think the original game was better about the way that it handled the transitions. I mean, hey, you're going to lose some stuff when you're remaking a game.
Yep.
And I think it can be a bit janky in how it transitions its score, because it's very dynamic in a battle, because usually it'll have kind of a brooding or intense arrangement playing over when you're kind of trying to do your thing and to get on the Colossus. And once you're on the Colossus, the score just becomes a super rousing, like incredibly sweeping thing. And the transition between that can be a bit, sometimes it can be a bit noticeable. But it's very good. So I wanted to just give props to that soundtrack, because I feel like people don't talk about it enough.
That's cool.
And I wanted to mention, this is a bit of an aside from actually talking about the game, but Brenda was very excited about this game, and rightfully so, you know, because, you know, we hear about you. I mean, who hasn't heard about the Shadow of the Colossus? And, you know, she was relating it to, you know, the people who made The Last Guardian, which is a game about being with your furry friend and solving puzzles and stuff. Are you familiar with more or less like the cover art for Shadow of the Colossus?
Yeah, I know what it looks like.
It's like the one big Colossus dude that's just kind of standing there forlornly.
The mossy one?
Yeah. Brenda thought that you were friends with it. And that made me think how much better this game would be if it were just a Shadow of the Colossus dating sim.
Fuck.
What if... Let me date the Colossi. Cowards. You absolute cowards.
Colossus boyfriend.
Now please, on Steam Greenlight. Please. I need that dating sim in my life.
Fuck.
That would be a far better game.
I thought you were going to go on like an alternate universe version of the game where like you befriend the Colossi and they fight the other Colossi, but this is much better.
I
like
that's basically Pacific Rim.
the terrible licensed Pacific Rim game that I don't even know. Did it already come out or is it incipient?
No, that came out for the first one. Was a Pacific Rim. It was terrible.
Okay, good. My worldview is intact.
But to talk about this game seriously, I guess, it's... I think the animation is absolutely stellar, and it really sells the idea, because Wander is not this, the main character Wander is not this graceful hero. He just slips and slides, stumbles constantly. When you get on the horse, he just kind of like he barely gets on it, and he has to like struggle to get on top of it. Yeah. Like when he falls from the Colossus, it's not like, he doesn't like roll to the ground and like comes back up. He falls flat on his face and takes like literally like a minute to get back up. Like you can just hammer away on the buttons, and he's just kind of like, no.
God, this sounds like such a fun game.
No, it is some of the boss fights themselves are pretty engaged. Like they're just a Zelda game without the dungeons. Or
I wasn't being sarcastic. I literally do want to play.
Oh, okay, good.
Like I have to like mash on the buttons and anxiously watch this dude get up after eating.
Yeah, it's very good. Literally, like you wait and wait for the guy to get up. But yeah, there's no grace to it. Like it's not like he's not your typical hero. And it really sells the idea that, like, this is wrong. Like, what you're doing is, I'm not talking about, like, morally. I'm not saying that, like, oh, yeah, you're the real bad guy. Yeah. I'm saying that, like, it feels like you're literally going against nature. Like, because it's these incredibly vast beings that you're scaling and just taking down with this idiot who wants to, like, just... something that is completely inconsequential to the grand scheme of like the world in general. And like, he's just going against all of that. And it really does sell it. Like it's, you defeat a beast. And I know that so many think pieces have been written on like, oh, I felt bad when I killed the boss in the Shadow of the Colossus, but it's not that. It feels almost perverse.
Spoiler alert, by the way, you don't have to kill them. You can't actually date them all. Yeah.
Really? That's great.
Spoiler alert.
Thanks a lot, Fumito. Thanks a lot, Fumito Ueda.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. And I never really thought about like what the title meant. I guess like Shadow of the Colossus. Like usually, I would just think of it like, well, it's a game about it's a game that plays with scale and stuff. So it probably just really wants to sell the idea that you exist in the shadow of of your enemies. The more I think about it, the more I feel like that you are literally just. The Colossus you are literally trying to beat death. Like you are killing death, because like you know whatever. This will be a very shitty like basic English major thing to say, but you know you need light to cast a shadow, right? Whoa!
Got him.
Hey! Are you still with me?
Put that.
It's like an onion. There's layers. right. So you the Colossus is necessary. The contrast between life and death is that dichotomy is completely necessary to how we understand life, to how we live our lives. That kind of the constant it's about that constant dialectic that happens literally every moment. Every time we wake up, like it's that tension. That like, hey, I could die at any moment, but that kind of also, in a way, defines how we live our lives, and it's about how going against that might be just it feels incredibly perverse, you know, and wrong. So that's cool. that's a fun, happy game.
Yeah, no, but that is definitely, like, the point. Like, I've never played it, but I've read enough think pieces to get, like, the gist of it. Mm-hmm. And people do make a point of, like, oh, you know, the later battles, and, like, as you get further and further along in the game, like, the atmosphere gets darker and more oppressive to sort of drive that point home.
Totally. It does not get happy.
Yeah, but from the very beginning, you're laying that groundwork with the animations and stuff like that. I think that's art. Boom.
We did it. We are the arts. We are the video game scientists. And we've determined it. I'm enjoying it way more than I thought that I would. I really thought that it might be one of those games that just weren't for me. Like, everyone just loses their their shit over it, and I'm just like, it's alright. I'm enjoying it more than I thought I would. So, yeah, that's good.
That's nice. Maybe someday I'll get a PlayStation. And I'll finally play Shadow of the Colossus. How much money at this point would I pay to play Shadow of the Colossus? Is it over $400?
No, no.
Is it a $400 game? No.
But you wouldn't have to. I mean, unless you wanted a pro, you could just get a base PS4. You're not that kind of person. You would all.
I'm so old.
We'll see. We'll see when that comes out in the future.
I've decided something. I've decided something just now, and the listeners will have just heard it. But I'm gonna do bumpers for each segment. Like whenever we segue, I'm gonna do like interludes or something.
Oh, I actually wanted to talk about one more video game if you don't mind.
Oh yeah.
It's Dragon Ball Z: The Legacy of Goku.
Let's talk about it.
I haven't gone too far into it. I just wanted to talk about how much I love it when video game adaptations go completely off the rails in terms of what they're adapting.
That's the only way to do it, in my opinion.
It's so good. I put in the show notes that you rescue a cat, and then the owner of the cat teaches you solar flare, and then tells you to go fight Raditz. It's behind him. It's the entrance of the entrance is the you literally have to walk into a dinosaur skeleton to get to the next area. It's great. I love it. I feel like it'll be like when we had like all of these like different transcriptions of like Homeric texts and shit. Like in the future we'll be like, hey, do you remember Dragon Ball? And like we'll be like, well, which one? Like which of the rich, like is it the Goku who saved the cat, or is it the Goku who's like a terrible father? Is it the Goku who's like basically Superman?
Is it like Old Testament Goku?
Yeah, exactly. That's what
is it, like Dead Sea Scrolls Goku?
Apocryphal Goku.
This Goku has not been sanctioned by the church.
Yeah, non-canon. Stricken from the canon.
Yeah.
That's exciting to me. Just like, it probably won't happen, but what if it did? What if we lost the original Dragon Ball? Like, God forbid. But like, what if we like lost the original Dragon Ball Z and all we had were like all of these different edits of it? We still have Kai, but we lost all of the original like Z episodes. And, like, all we had is, like, video game adaptations in Kai. And we just had to, like, fill in the blanks.
That'd be pretty wild.
Speaking of, actually, Wad, here are some words that you probably thought would never escape my lips. I subscribe to Crunchyroll.
Whoa.
You're right. I just wanted to watch Super.
I was trying to think, like, I can't really... I could expect, like, it could be anything. Like, I can't think of, like, but yeah, I did not expect that.
I just want to watch Super, because it's so good. I really like Super. Even the filler stuff is really good. Like, do you care for Super spoilers? It's for, like, filler.
No, you can totally spoil it, but first let me do the bumper into our TV segment.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, let me untie it.
No, I got it.
Don't speak!
Did I do that?
Okay, there it was.
Alright, so, this is just spoilers for filler. Like, I'm not gonna spoil any main arcs. It's just, Trunks and Goten get whisked away to this other planet, because they get stuck in a delivery truck and like the guy speeds, like he's making a delivery for Bulma, and they get into the truck and they're like, wow, hijinks, and they accidentally get transported over there, and that planet is home to like this thing called I think they call it like superpower water or something like that, or just some water based MacGuffin or whatever. And it's being invaded by now by these people who want access to that artifact or whatever. Yeah. And they're like, are we gonna stop them? And like, and it seems like at first that it's just gonna be like whatever, like they're just gonna stop them, and it's gonna be your typical filler episode. But apparently the water thing isn't something that grants you special powers. It's something that actually like basically makes a copy of you and then spits you back out. And then you disappear a short while after you get copied, and basically your weird homunculus lives on as you. Fuck, which is kind of terrifying.
Can I say how excited I am that you just imparted onto me the information that there's a Dragon Ball Super subplot that is simply and solely an adaptation of Christopher Nolan's The Prestige?
Basically.
Shot for shot. Perfect. That's awesome.
Nailed it. It did it.
With Hugh Jackman. Tori, it's Goten.
Toriyama's a big Nolan fan. But yeah, no. So they get in trouble, and it gets to the point where Trunks and Goten can't beat the thing. And Vegeta goes to the planet to save them or whatever. And he actually gets copied by the thing, and he gets spat out. And it gets to a point where it's Goku who has to beat Vegeta's homunculus.
Yeah.
And here's the best thing ever. Like, it's Vegeta watching Goku beat him, basically, because the homunculus has, like, all his strength and shit. So it's literally just literally, it's a copy of who he is.
Yeah.
Of his fighting spirit. To a point where, like, the thing actually refuses to absorb anybody else, because doing so would be, and it would be admitting that it isn't strong enough, so it actually won't absorb anyone else.
Oh, fuck, that's good.
It's very good. Vegeta in Super is the best part. And, like, so Vegeta's, like, rooting, doesn't know who to root for. Like, he literally interrupts the fight, and he's like, "You do better, but you also don't let him kill you, because then I'll die." But be better. You stop. So it's very, very good, and that, it's just a lot of, like, very good character based humor that you. It's more like a Dragon Ball. Honestly, it's more goofy. It's less about, like, a super serious threat to the planet or whatever. And that's very, very good. And I just wanted to say that I'm really enjoying it.
That sounds fantastic. That's like, I love the low stakes Dragon Ball.
Yep, and that's exactly.
It's just the best. Because the thing about low stakes, and I think this is true for, like, all anime and maybe even all entertainment at large, but, like, when your characters are, like, in low stakes situations, you kind of have to work harder as, like, a writer to, like, make shit entertaining, right?
Absolutely. So it's like, that's why video games will never have good stories, because it's always about saving the world.
Yeah, seriously. That's why the best ever video game is Stardew Valley.
Fair enough. And Animal Crossing.
Yeah, Animal Crossing before that. Yeah. But Stardew Valley has better graphics, so.
Graphics. So we can that was my brief foray into TV. That's all I have to talk about TV-wise. I think you might have more, or do you want to save that, maybe?
I'm going to save mine for next time.
Okay, that's fine. I've got one. Want to briefly touch on music? We don't have too much time left. We can briefly touch on that. All right. I just wanted to. You know what? You want to? You probably have the bigger, more relevant thing. Why don't you speak about the sweet soundtrack to Black Panther?
The Black Panther soundtrack. Mm. Here's the thing. I was excited to talk about it until I came to that realization, and I was coming out of the theater, and it's like, I'm not actually equipped to talk about this, because, again, I'm not black.
You listen to a substantial amount of, like, hip-hop and stuff, so...
I'm informed, I think is fair to say, but I'm definitely not, like, I'm not gonna use this podcast with its broad... huge listenership.
Sweeping reach.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to subject...
millions of... Your immense... Your bully pulpit.
My cult-like following. I'm not going to subject them to, like, my tepid takes, I think. I think all I can say... All I'm going to say about it is that it's, like, it's great, it complements the movie perfectly, and it's actually... You know what? It was actually a mistake to listen to it before I'd seen the movie.
Oh.
Because you do get, you know, it's more relevant, and the songs gain new meaning after you've seen the film. Okay. Except for the SZA one, which just plays over the end credits, which is
so you
fine.
Can you can listen to that one free.
Yeah, you can listen to that one. That's the amuse-bouche of that album. and also the one with The Weeknd. That's also in amuse-bouche.
Oh, Weeknd's in there? Important. That's a shame.
Yeah, he's in there. He comes in right at the end. He's like, it's me, Dio. Because it's the last track. Like, you don't expect it.
You should turn this into a JoJo's podcast.
Yeah. Okay, but it's good, and that one paramedic song is just so good.
It's like,
I've never heard of these guys who are on the on that song, SOB, and Kendrick's on it too, and there's a couple of other features. But like, I don't know, I've never. It's so good. It's such a banger.
I won't listen to it before, but I'll probably take a peek at it.
Listen to the first 10 seconds and then switch it off.
All right. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Well, just do it. I'll do the Amazon preview. The Amazon preview round of listening.
You'll do the musical equivalent of edging.
Yes. Love it. Love it. Hi, Mom.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
So, any other music things you want to talk about, or was that mainly your big thing?
Well, I'm gonna do a whole thing in a future episode. We're gonna talk about nothing but soundtracks.
Nothing but okay, that's fun. Could it be video game soundtracks too, or is it just like score, all, like film
dude,
scores?
Dude, we are just
all in.
An embarrassment of soundtracks, an embarrassment of songs that don't exist on their own, but are good enough too.
All right, cool. Well, I wanted to speak mostly. My stuff is mostly just things that either came out today, as of 2/16, February 16th, or mm-hmm. hasn't come out yet, and there's just like singles floating out there. But I like what I'm hearing.
Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Timely. I guess the one that I'm looking forward to the most perhaps is Titus Andronicus, because they're making an album of ballads.
Nice.
Like just ballads. And the one that I sent
finally.
You, yeah. The one that I sent you, for those not acquainted with Titus Andronicus. Titus Andronicus is they started out as a very rough lo-fi punk rock band, and they gradually stepped up the fineness of it. The fidelity went up a bit. But they definitely still very aggressive and punk, and now they're doing an album of ballads, which is in keeping with their ambition, I guess. The one that I sent you one so that you can listen to, I described it as like a bar band doo-wop, song, and that's basically what it is. And it sounds very it's very good. It's jaunty, It's like I said, it's probably the best chance you have of liking a Titus Andronicus song. I'm looking forward to the album because, like I said, it's literally an entire album. According to them, it's an entire album of ballads. So I'm interested in seeing how that plays out. I think the album's name is A Productive Cough, which mm-hmm. is a pretty good name for an album
on
2018.
Name. That's a powerful image.
Yeah, and it's exactly what you think of. Like, if you read along the lyrics.
You say that phrase, I know exactly what you're talking about, and I not only do I relate to it, but I implicitly trust a person who is willing to say that phrase out loud in polite company. Like, you know what you're about, and you're not you're not afraid to stand in your truth, and I love that.
Yeah, it's a... I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully, it delivers on its promise. I don't know. I don't know if I want to like get into it now since we're not super short on time, but we want to keep this as concise as possible. But one of the other bands I want to talk about, Car Seat Headrest, they recently put out a remaking or a reimagining of one of their earlier albums. And the singles I listened to are pretty good, but I just Titus Andronicus and Car Seat Headrest apparently have beef. Yeah, and I don't know if you remember, but I told you that I emailed the frontman of Titus Andronicus just to... Because you respect him. Exactly. In spite of myself, I do somewhat admire the person.
Yeah.
And he was doing, like, an old man yells at cloud thing, where he was probably... and I want to, like, the reason I bring it up is because I actually want to, like, maybe, like, touch on this thing where, like, old people who are older or have an older soul and are politically active might kind of have, like, a knee-jerk reaction when people talk about safe spaces or more inclusive media being conscientious about, like, trigger words and stuff like that, where it just brings them back to a time where censorship actually was, like, a growing concern. Yeah. And it's very frustrating because, like, it's not about that. It's not about stopping things from coming out, and more about just being mindful of what you're putting out, and just making it more accessible for people to engage with. It's not about hiding from the world. It's about being able to confront it, really, actually.
And, it's about enabling other people to not hide and not censor themselves.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that's a very, it's like a linchpin of, like, this leftist schism. Yeah. And so that's kind of frustrating. He didn't reply. I don't think I'm an important enough person for Patrick Stickles to reply to. Hopefully he looked at it and saw what I meant. But yeah, those are two bands I like a lot. And they have something coming out, and it's pretty good. It sounds like they're going to be pretty good. The other one that I'm really, really anticipating is Hop Along. Hop Along sounds like the new Hop Along album sounds like it's coming along very nicely. It's hopping along very nicely. It has the same, like, I really like,
I wasn't
the,
ready. I wasn't ready for it.
It has the same really compelling, I like the singer a lot. She has, like, a very interesting voice. You could listen to Tibetan rock stars and get kind of like a feel for what I'm talking about. It's a very earnest sounding voice. And it's cool. And it has, like, some nice, naughty guitar work. And, like, Knotty guitar work.
Not like she puts the guitar between her legs. And it's like,
no, not like that. Not suggestive guitar work.
For suggestive guitar work. The new rock band.
Oh, God, I hate you. And the last thing I wanted to talk about, and I also, like, I had to prove myself. It would, like, just to make people understand that, no, I'm not just, I don't only listen to metal, and I just had to, like, come with all of these the music things to talk about. But I do want to talk.
You're pigeonholing yourself pretty hard in this second episode.
Yeah, I didn't want to talk about Natalia Lafourcade, if I'm pronouncing that right. I hope I am. I'm talking about specifically, I think it's called Musas, and it's like it's an homage to Latin American folk songs.
Nice.
And it's really, really great. It has, like, really stunningly bright guitar work, and it makes me want to just pick up my guitar and start playing stuff. It's just wonderfully produced, very, very warm sounding. It has a killer interpretation of Llorona on there.
Mm-hmm.
It also has this song called, I think it's called Duerme Negrito.
Uh-oh.
No. Apparently it's like a, well, I don't know. But it's a pretty well-known Nicaraguan lullaby.
Oh,
and
okay.
If I'm not mistaken, if I'm remembering correctly, it's about a nanny who's trying to sing a child to sleep because their mother is out working the fields, possibly. If I'm not mistaken, I might be misremembering. I gave like a very passing glance at what the lyrics were about. Although once I heard "Duerme Negrito," I immediately, like, my ears perked up because, like, I was like, listen to this a little bit. And I started digging into it a little bit. And apparently, like, the person who popularized the song, whose name escapes me right now, they heard field hands singing it, and they were like, "Oh, wow, that sounds really good. I'm a sing that to people." And they just kind of made hella money off of this song that they interpreted, which I don't know. I just thought was an interesting thing to bring up in what is. I mean, it's a good collection of songs, and it's I I feel like I need to listen to something like that every now and then to not feel like a freaking gringo. But I don't know, something interesting to think about, how like that stuff, even when you're doing like an homage to like a collection of Latin American folk songs, how that stuff crops up in terms of like, I don't know, how you not appropriate, but how you appropriate, but how you like just use Black people's things constantly without their permission, I guess.
It's a long storied tradition.
Yep, that's and I just found it interesting to see it in a Latin American context, because usually all of that is very much swept under the rug.
Latin Americans are so fucking racist.
I
can say that.
Yeah, we can say that. We're fine. We can say that. But yeah, I just wanted to bring that up. It's a stellar collection of songs, though. You should listen to it. It's very good.
I will. That actually sounds really pleasant.
It's nice.
It's a nice palate cleanser to all the really just
grimy beats.
Yeah. Just the hardest.
The opposite of lo-fi chill hip-hop beats.
You know what? Yeah. The exact opposite of anime 24/7 screaming lo-fi chill hip-hop beats for studying or gaming.
Alright. Is that, are we done? Is that it?
I think on this one, we're all out of time.
Okay.
And I'm gonna workshop a new sign-off.
You want another sign off? Well, here's one. Thank you for listening to the first podcast in recorded history.
Yes, that's a good one.
You good?
Thank you for listening to the Ur podcast.
The Ur podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you say Ur?
I say Ur.
Oh man.
We gotta mull that over, I guess. I'm pretty sure it's Ur. I don't know. Nobody wants to hear a discussion about Ur texts. It's fine. We're good.
Yeah, we're good. So, thanks for listening to the first podcast, the first but not worst. That's perfect. A good tagline.
First but not the worst.
First but not the worst, and that's a good tagline because it's sort of there's a unifying thread there in that both those statements are false.
Good. Very true.
Yeah, I put a nice self-deprecating cherry on that. People love that. People love... Mm-hmm. Love it
when we put ourselves down.
Yeah.
Alright.
Alright.
Peace.
Hit that outro music.